didn't really think that we were going to hit this point in the 2018 season. I had much higher hopes for the 2018 season, but it feels like an episode in which we just need to forget pretty much everything as of late,
yeah.
On like a micro and a macro level.
Take
and,
the blue pill. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like slip out of all of it. And so we're going to welcome you into this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And we're going to forego our normal discussion of, you know, the Colorado Rockies because things have not been great. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to do a full-on Ask PDP episode this week, which is not something that we have done in quite some time, but we are going to do a full Ask PDP episode, which includes baseball questions and non-baseball questions. And, we're going to do that. We're going to do that today.
Yep.
Yes.
Because everything is just
everything
terrible.
Everything is bad and not good.
And then not just with the Rockies. Everything is bad and terrible in all all aspects of life.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And it's not getting better, and it's not going to be better.
Yeah, no, it certainly doesn't seem that way at all.
So on that note,
very exciting stuff. Let's get started. Let's just dive right in. Fire
let's
away.
Let's dive right
let's
in.
Go for it.
It's from Colin below 500 at Colin G26. If the 2018 season continues to be this painful, can I call it a rebuilding season to make myself feel better?
No, that's the sad part. You really can't.
No,
this is
the Rockies
season.
Are 38-41.
Yeah.
So,
and
listen,
you know, they're 3 games under 500. Like, it's been painful to this point, but they're also not even at the midway point. Like, there's still time to get it solved, and there's still time to get back in the race. And they're not even out of the race. They're, what, 4.5 back in the wild card right now? Like, it's been
seven
a disappointing
back in the division. Yeah, 4.5 in the wild card.
Remember when they entered June in first place? That was cute.
Yeah.
There's still plenty of time to get it figured out. The problem is, and I was asked this question on a radio show the other day, are they showing any signs of getting it figured out? No. That's the issue.
In fact, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, but the frustrating thing is, you can't really say that it's a rebuilding year because they've been rebuilding to get to this year and next year and theoretically 2020. And that's, you know, like all the hot takers in town are all, trade John Gray. You can get so much for him. You can rebuild and contend instantly.
There's so many Mensa members on Denver radio. Yeah.
Not how it works in baseball. Second of all, if you're going to trade your stars right now, if you want a team that's going to trade Nolan or is going to trade Chuck, I mean, they're not going to trade Chuck. They just signed him that extension. But if you want all that, then you're going to be acquiring prospects. The window that you have created in order to be good involves prospects that have already graduated or are on the verge of graduating. If you acquire a bunch of guys who are in low A or high A, what are you doing? You're not building yourself for the window that you've been building for the last 5 years. I still don't think, despite us banging our heads against the wall for four seasons of this podcast, whatever it is, I still don't think people have realized that's not how baseball works.
Yeah, we as the Rockies.
And I'm not saying that about this question, by the way. I'm saying that about Denver Sports Radio.
We as Rockies fans and this front office has been building for basically these 2 years, 2018 and 2019. They probably went a little bit over their skis last year and actually making the playoffs in 2017. The team was good enough, but I don't think even the front office expected to make the playoffs. It was due to a hot start and the rest of the National League being pretty average to terrible. This year, the NL is better, and the team was supposed to be aiming for 2018 always. When the Tulo trade was the line of demarcation from one era of Rockies baseball to the next. When they traded Tulo, they expected to be contenders in 2018, and they got their wish for the first couple of months, and now it seems like the Rockies are falling backwards, onto their faces, falling backwards, which is hard to do. It means they're turning around in midair while they're falling backwards, tripping over their own feet, and then laying right in a puddle of mud or I don't even know anymore. It's not good.
Feces.
Definitely feces. This was always the plan was 2018 and potentially 2019 because you know Nolan Arenado is going to be a free agent after next year. You already signed Charlie Blackmon to a deal. You assume they're trying to sign Nolan Arenado to a long-term deal as well. You want those two guys going forward to be the core of the team you have built to be a perennial playoff contender.
Yeah.
I mean, you're to a point right now where the moves you made this season to fortify what was considered a weakness last year was that bullpen. We've mentioned ad nauseum on this podcast that it was very hard to find the flaws in the guys that they had picked to lead that bullpen charge, and they signed all that big money to in the offseason. Wade Davis was very, very good. Brian Shaw had been the most consistent reliever in baseball over the last 5 years. Jake McGee had an outstanding 2017 after a poor 2016. And they've all pretty much fallen down the wayside this year. It has been all bad. None of it has been good this year for those guys.
Yeah. Adam Ottavino was the one.
I mean,
it wasn't all Ottavino.
Like, there was an awful strike zone. The ball four that walked in, what ended up being the winning run was a strike. So you can't blame Adam for that. And you can't blame Adam at all because he has been arguably one of the best relievers in all of baseball this year, even missing time. So that is the issue. It is the fact that all of these unforeseen circumstances when it comes to relievers, and that is the problem with relievers. When you do, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but the relievers are the one spot on any roster that is by far the most volatile from year to year. And so when you sign relievers to big money deals, one, you don't usually see that often because that is very difficult to project going forward. And that is what you sign players for. You sign for what they did in the past, and you sign them for what you hope to project for them going forward. Those relievers have all been very, very terrible this year. Now, next year, all three of those guys could be absolutely outstanding. And Adam Ottavino could suck next year if he comes back with the team. He is a free agent. He could suck next year. And then we're in a different situation right now. So it's hard to be positive about this team right now because it has been such a slog for the last couple of weeks. And you look at the team, three games under 500. It is not as bad probably as, you know, Twitter tends to make it out, which is always the case. But it is, I totally understand people who are just thinking that it's 2008 all over again. By the way, I looked this up last night. The Rockies right now, as we stand, are 38-41, seven games out of first place. They have a minus 48 run differential. The same time in 2008, they were 15 games under 500, yet eight games out of first place with a minus 68 run differential. There are some parallels, as it were, from 10 years ago today.
15 games under 500 on June 27th.
15 games under 500 on June 27th.
What a disaster. Ugh.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
But that team was 20-19 at home and 12-28 on the road.
Wowzers. That is, Yep.
There are similarities, and there's reasons to think that there's, you know, plenty of time to right the ship. There's still a lot of season left, but my goodness, it has been tough the last few weeks.
Yeah, it has not been great. But I think it leads us into a very good next question. Every team wins 60 games and loses 60 games, which means about 42 are make and break for the year. What's our record in those 42 from Andrew Doran at AP Doran?
0-42, it seems like.
Right now, it feels like that lately. My worry is that you end up, even in those games, if you end up 18-24, then you end up as a 78-84 team. Right. And that's not only is it not a playoff season, it feels like a pretty significant step back.
Yeah, I mean, it does. And those are the ones that always seem to get the Rockies.
Yeah. And that's how it's felt this year. It feels like more than anything this year, what we've talked about with the Rockies is, well, that one got away. You know, like
bad
every
break.
Game, you know, the Texas game was probably the worst of those games this season. But, you know, you feel like, oh, well, the finale in Cincinnati escaped, the Texas finale escaped. They should have played
that game against the Brewers. Home.
All those little things, those by the end of a season, especially in an era in which five teams make the playoffs, if the Rockies end up as an 82-80 team, if they somehow get on a better roll and they play five games over 500 from here the rest of the way out, you know, an 82-80 season could get you into the playoffs, probably won't. But if you look back at the first 78 games of this season, there are at least five games that you could say the Rockies should have won. There are probably five games you could have said the Rockies should have lost. But I feel like this year, the games that they should have won far outnumber the games that they stole. And that's what it feels like they're going to get to the end of the season looking at right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's Early in the year, the team was playing very well in close games, just like they did last year. Games decided by 3 runs or less. They were one of the best teams over the first couple of months of the season. The exact same way they were at the beginning of last year. They were playing very well when they had a lead after 6 innings. And all of that in the last month or so have been absolutely turned on its head. Which is a problem for a team like the Rockies, who needs to play well in close games. And they have not been, because they have the bullpen in theory that would be able to propel them to victories in some of those games. And early in the season, they did. McGee was pitching well. Ottavino was out of his mind. Wade Davis was pitching well. Even Brian Shaw hadn't fallen off a cliff completely yet. And that's when the team was winning. They were winning those close games. They were winning games on the road. Still hadn't really won at home, but they were winning the games they needed to win. And they had built some capital, and that capital is all gone.
That, I mean, I think there's a very good question in here, oddly enough, as strange as this is, from Mike Flick at Flickerbach, who normally is just terrible. but Mike's question, and I think this is a very valid one, and even though we started this off on a downer note, and, you know, it feels like the world, well, I mean, the world is falling apart and everything's burning and terrible, but I think this is definitely something to keep in mind. Mike's question is, quote, "The Rockies are floating around 500 and Rockies Twitter is acting like someone died. Is this the largest offset between record and emotion we have ever seen with this club?" I don't know if it's the largest, because Rockies Twitter is that insufferable, you know, us very firmly included in that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But I think it is very important to keep in mind, this is not the 2008 team. Even though this team might be around the same deficit behind the first place team in the division and all that type of stuff, this is a team that is 3 games under 500. What I think contributes to this, not what contributes, what I think creates this, is everybody expected this is the year the Rockies turn the corner. Not only is it the opening of a window of contention, you already got a head start on the window of contention in 2017 when you made a postseason appearance. This is the year in which you assert yourselves, you win 90 to 95 games.
It was expectations. It
exactly. Yeah. And we've never really had expectations, and we don't know how to handle expectations. That's what's contributing to this. But at the same time, like, it is important to keep in mind that this is a team that's 3 games under 500. And if they can continue to figure out how to win on the road, and if they can show some of what they showed at the beginning of the homestand before they continued, the ends of homestands should just never end, because they play well in the middle of homestands. It's like they struggle that first game, then they play well for 3-4 games in a row, and then the last game or two, especially if the last game of a homestand is on a Sunday. The Rockies have somehow receded into being the 2010 team that cannot win on Sundays.
Yeah, that's fun.
They, you know, if homestands never end, they'll be fine. But if they figure out how to win at Coors Field, they figure out how to play the games like they played against the Mets and the first game against the Marlins, then I think this team is going to be fine. I mean, I get asked so often in radio interviews, is it too early to give up on the Rockies? Yeah, it's too early. It's not even halfway into the season. Of course,
Calm down, Mike Evans. Yeah.
Like, could it be, if the Broncos were 3-4, are you having that same conversation? No. If the Rockies win their next 3 games, they are a 4-4 football team going into week 9. That's what they are. That's how we have to explain it to everybody in this town. That's how they are. So is it too early? Yes, it's too early to give up. So I think there is a lot of validity to that question. But I also think Rockies Twitter, we're all dumb, so we're all going to yell from the rooftops.
No, it's been a crappy month of June. The team is 8-15 in June.
Yeah.
The team ERA in June is nearly 7.
Yeah.
You know, they were 14-13 in April. They're 15-11 in May. They are 8-15 in June. They've already walked 22 more men in June in 3 fewer games than they did in all of the month of May. They've allowed 37 home runs this month. Teams are hitting .298 against them with a .900 OPS this month. Yeah, that sucks. It has been super awful to watch.
But also.
Every single Rockies team has done this in the month of June for the most part, I feel
like.
The offense has picked it up. The offense is averaging 6 runs a game in the month of June. That's awesome. It's by far the best of the year.
That's great.
And it doesn't seem to matter now.
It doesn't seem to really be helping. But, you know, baseball's long. The issue is when you have expectations and you don't know how to process your emotions when those expectations aren't fulfilled, it's easy to get very down. This is a team that came into this month 4 games over .500. If they leave this month 3 games under .500, is it the end of the world? No. They are putting themselves behind the eight ball, obviously, in a year in which the division felt for a long time very winnable. I'm not sure if that's the case anymore because the D-backs have started to play really well. But this is by far not the end of the season. I mean, we're not anywhere close to give up on the Rockies. They should be sellers. And I think even to have that enter your logic right now is misguided. Not to impugn, well, you know, they really got to start thinking about the future. But in baseball, especially when you're a small market team, mid-market team, you build for these windows. If things don't go well in the window, that doesn't mean you blow it up in year number one of what you're expecting to be 3 or 4 years of contention. You can't do that. So I think there is still some pump the brakes-ism to be had here, which is kind of funny because we started this so negatively. But I do think that it's you got to pour some water on the fire of what's, you know, currently burning down Rockies Twitter.
Yeah. All right. Another one from Connor. At Connor Bula, another Connor on Rocky's Twitter, says, I was only 8 at the time. Oh, my God. I was only 8 at the time, and now you're into baseball. So I was just wondering how 2008 felt like as a fan.
Oh, boy.
From NL champs to same old Rockies in a year. Do you have any memories, positive or negative, from 2008? And are you getting flashbacks to 08 from this season? By the way, you were 8. Good God. You shouldn't be on Twitter, sir. Child.
We had our first Major League draftee born in the year 2000. I mean, if he was 8 in 2008, he's a legal adult now. If he had a birthday in the first 6 months.
But still, just run. Run as fast as you can away from this.
Don't be on Twitter ever. Nobody should ever be on Twitter. Twitter's the worst thing ever. I'm heavily considering deleting my own Twitter account. Finally.
It's getting there for me.
Yeah, I don't. And like, Twitter's like an evil company too. You know what I mean? Like, you get doxxed on Twitter and you complain like, oh, somebody posted my address, and Twitter's like, nah, it doesn't violate our terms.
It's like, oh, we don't care.
They're telling people to come to my house and kill me, and Twitter's like, nah, it's still not really a violation. They're just,
you see,
like,
what the promoted tweets in our timeline last night was from a literal Russian bot with the handle Jason Curtis 43 with a Russian name, and it said, a graphic said, I love USA, and it was a promoted tweet. I was like, what
the
hell
is
this?
Taking that money, Jack.
Yeah,
at Jack.
Yeah. Normal country, totally great website.
2008. I do remember 2008 as feeling like 2007 was the episode where George Costanza has the picture of the woman with man hands, and that gets him into the Forbidden City, the club in the meatpacking district, in which every woman inside is like a supermodel. And then George loses the picture, and when he tries to go back to get into the club again, it's turned into a meatpacking plant. Like, that's how it felt. Like, 2007, you were inside, you were behind the walls, you were in the Forbidden City, you were seeing things you had never seen before. Everything was beautiful, everything was exciting, everything was fun. And then 2008 was just like, oh, there are sides of beef hanging in here again. That's how it felt. That was 2008. And it really just felt like, honestly, I think 2008 was more discouraging than any other. The excitement that 2007, I think in the long run, you'll never forget, and it's still the best memories of my sports fandom. But 2008 made you feel like, oh, no, they didn't get anything figured out. This is still the same franchise. Like, it robbed you of the optimism.
Yeah, and that was was the second summer that I was actually living in Denver. I had just graduated college.
We didn't know each other then yet.
We did not know each other then yet. I'm sure we'd been at the same Rockies games many times and not realized.
So weird.
I was living in Denver. I went to a lot of Rockies games that summer. I was working at the final year of what was then Fox Sports Rocky Mountain. It was – everybody was incredibly psyched till the season started. And then I think like the first day of the season, they got blown out. Or no, they won that. Then they – the first home game of the season, they got blown out by the D-backs. And they got swept in that series, and it was kind of like, oh boy.
Yep.
Back here
to
we
this,
go.
Are we?
Yeah. The one game I really remember from that year that was like, wow, that was great. The July 4th game against the Marlins when they were down 13-4 in the fourth inning.
Yeah.
And came back to win that game 18-17.
That was the highlight of that year.
That was the highlight of that year.
I think the largest comeback in franchise history.
Yeah, that was Iannetta had the walk off single in the bottom of the ninth to win 18-17 over the Marlins in a game that personified Coors. Greg Reynolds started that game, by the way. no surprise, gave up 7 runs on 7 hits in an inning and a third. That sounds about right. But beyond that, like, what do you remember from 2008? Severe disappointment. I think they gave up like Craig Biggio's 3,000th hit that year. I don't know, man.
Clint Hurdle kept his job the whole season.
Though not for long after. No, and this was my entire worry going into the season, was that like I just didn't want 2008 to happen all over again. Yeah. And like it's starting to seem like that in a lot of ways. Maybe not for the same reasons, but it is starting to feel like that, because we've mentioned the Rockies do very, very poorly when expectations are placed on them. They are at their best when they are coming out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have expectations often, and so they don't know how to handle expectations, it seems like. And that's where it leaves us, which is not fun. I don't think this feels quite as bad as 2008. I mean, especially because they are 3 games under .500. They're 15 games under .500 on June 27th of 2008. That's insane. But there are certainly some similarities, which is not fun at all.
Yeah. All right. From Ethan Kennedy at eKennedy57. Is this loss, the one last night, just more fuel to the proverbial fire in the belly of this Rockies team, or am I being too optimistic?
Hey, man. I mean, I think if the Rockies get to a point late in the season where they go on a good roll, I think they'll point back to this stretch in June and say, you know, you got to go through those things with your teammates. You have to suffer through some adversity. You got to know all the cliches that athletes throw out there. But good teams do have to go through some struggles. Not everybody is going to be the 98 Yankees. Not everybody is going to be last year's Astros. I mean, it's not a wire-to-wire type of circumstance for most teams where you lead a division, you just dominate all year, and you don't go through struggles. In 2018 Yankees, for that matter. I don't think the Yankees have had a 3-game losing streak this year.
They did. They got swept by the Rays this weekend.
First one of the season. Yeah. So it's most teams are going to go through some struggles. Again, you need to go on a good run. I mean, the Rockies really from here on out need to play about 12 games over 500 in order to guarantee that they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know if that's in the cards, but I do know that this team is too talented to continue playing like June for the rest of the year. That's the thing. I remember a couple seasons ago doing this show, must have been 2016, Walt Weiss's last year, in which the Rockies really looked like the team that had the makings of something good coming in the future, but you could just tell that that wasn't going to stay up. They weren't going to keep that up throughout the entirety of the year because they just weren't that talented of a group. They were a team that had some good pieces, but they were not a team that 1 through 25 was going to sustain a winning record for the whole season. They had some good stretches, but they weren't going to keep it going. This year, it feels like the opposite of that. This year, it feels like they're too talented of a roster to continue struggling
to keep playing this poorly. Well, and last year there were 5.5 good teams in the National League, which is why the Rockies were able to hold on and make the playoffs. This year there's 8 teams that are pretty decent in the National League, with a couple more straggling on, including the Rockies in that one. The Braves, Phillies, and Nationals are all pretty good teams in the NL East. The Brewers, Cubs, and Cardinals, all pretty good teams in the NL Central. D-backs and Dodgers, pretty good teams in the NL West. And then you got the Giants, the Rockies, I'm not going to say the Pirates, you know, floating along on the edges. I mean, you got 5 spots for playoff teams.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Last year in the NL, it was the Nationals, it was the Cubs, it was the Dodgers, it was the D-backs, it was the Rockies, and then the Brewers, kind of. That's 5.5 teams for 5 spots. Now, 10 teams for 5 spots, maybe, if you count the Giants. I don't think they're much of a team going forward, but people say the same thing about the Rockies. So, the NL is better this year. The AL is garbage. The NL is better. The AL is where the NL was last year. There are maybe 5 good teams in the AL this year.
Yeah.
You got the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Indians, the Astros, the Mariners. That might be it. Right now, the A's are in the second wild card spot in the American League. The A's are the only team close. They're 7 games back. It's the Red Sox and the Mariners right now. That's it. It's the Red Sox, Mariners, and then a 7-game cushion in the AL wildcard. That's where the Rockies were last year, right? It was Rockies and D-backs, and then everybody else was like 8 games back into the middle of August.
Yeah.
And then the Rockies started faltering and barely held on over the Brewers.
Yeah.
That's the two leagues have switched. That's it.
Yeah, basically. That's what it feels like this year. Yeah, it is strange. From our buddy Nick at Nick the Walsh. In your professional opinion, exactly whose ass is in the jackpot now? Thanks. Ooh. I'll hang up and listen. And then Kyle did his Kyle thing, in which he corrected Nick's spelling of whose. Come on, Kyle. Everybody.
Come on, Kyle.
Yeah. Who's
nobody
ass is in the
grammar
jackpot?
Guy, Kyle. Yeah.
Who is it?
Whose ass is in the jackpot? Yours, the fan.
Guess what? It's you. I think it's got to be Darren Holmes' ass is in the jackpot right now. Although we still haven't established what ass in the jackpot means.
No. Like, is it a good thing? So is it a bad thing?
If it's a good thing, then it's not Darren Holmes. If it's a bad, and I'm not saying like I think Darren Holmes is a bad bullpen coach, but I think if heads are going to roll, that's where you start, I guess. But the Rockies have never been a heads rolling franchise.
No.
I don't know. I guess maybe it is you, the fan, now that I
think
about it.
It'd have been three, the Rockies are a team with like, you got three limbs in the grave and they're still just like, all right, another handshake agreement for another year. Like,
yeah, basically. Yeah.
What's it going to take for like anybody from this staff to get fired? Like who would be the first one? I mean,
You know, and I don't think it's a Steve Foster issue. I mean, everybody raves about Steve Foster and his work.
And Mark
and
Wiley.
Seems
and,
to like him. Mark Wiley. You know, Bud Black. I still have faith in Bud Black. I don't have many. I was saying this the other day in a conversation with somebody. When I think about the issues that I have with Bud Black, then I think about the issues that I had with Walt Weiss, and I think, oh, yeah, Bud Black's not that bad.
Right.
You know, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, is there some sacrificial lamb that they throw out there that maybe improves things? I don't know. The Rockies have never really been that type of franchise, so I'm not thinking so.
They have to be dragged kicking and screaming into firing somebody they hire.
Yeah, basically. Asses in the jackpot, if it's a good thing, I think is Nolan Arenado leading the vote getting at third base. I think his ass is in the jackpot.
That's a pretty good jackpot. Ass to be in?
I don't think you're in the ass. If you're in the ass, that's
an
a different
assed, thing. An assed jackpot.
yeah.
Oh, this is a good one from at Colorado Zeebo, asked BDP. A little over a month from a trade deadline, and here's $1 million question. Are we buyers or sellers?
It's all gonna depend on how the next month goes. Trade deadline is the last day of July. If the Rockies are a 500 team, they're buyers. If the Rockies collapse and are a team that is 15 games under 500 by that point, they're sellers. But I also don't think that they're sellers in the way that everybody seems to think they're sellers. The guy who I think is going to be sold, though,
DJ
Adam Ottavino.
Them too.
Adam is a free agent after this year, which breaks my heart because Adam is maybe my favorite Rocky of all time. Behind Larry Walker, and Adam is going to be extraordinarily valuable.
And relievers have
exactly
they get a lot on the open market. Now, Kelvin Herrera was he got a lot from the Nationals recently. Adam Ottavino could garner something similar. I know he's a free agent, so he'd be a rental, but relievers as rentals are the one thing that you overpay for when it comes to the trade deadline, because relievers like Adam Ottavino can win you a title. Just ask the Cubs.
Yeah.
They got Aroldis Chapman. They won the title because of it.
Yeah. And that depresses me immensely. But I think, you know, and I do think the other guy that they'll look at dealing is DJ. And we've talked about that for three seasons now. It feels like that the Rockies are in a good position to deal DJ. They've got more than enough depth in the middle infield spot for whether it's Garrett Hampson or Brendan Rodgers moves over there or Trevor Story moves over there and Brendan Rodgers takes over his short, whatever it is.
Garrett Hampson is still just kicking ass in Triple A too.
Garrett Hampson, guest on last week's The Show Before the Show podcast from MILB.com. For those
yes,
who
he was.
To go back and tune in, Garrett Hampson joined us from Triple A Albuquerque.
Like all he does is just put up the same numbers.
Everywhere. He's like Mel Tapia.
Yes.
It's a similar type of thing.
Yeah.
But not so many questions about the defense, it seems like, with him. And obviously different circumstances with an outfielder versus an infielder. But, Garrett Hampson is he's a very fun prospect.
And Brendan Rodgers playing really well right now. So, like, there's reason to be excited about those guys, and reason where the Rockies could, if they want to, trade DJ LeMahieu and not lose a ton of production. Garrett Hampson is a great, great glove guy in the infield. Now, obviously, it's hard to replace DJ, a guy who's won a batting title, a gold glover, an all-star, great player. that is the one position right now where the Rockies have enough depth at their high levels, their minor leagues, where trading him would make some amount of sense. Mm-hmm. Even if the team isn't necessarily going to sell.
Yeah.
That is a trade they could make at the deadline and not miss as many beats as people think they would.
And honestly, and this would be extremely unorthodox and unconventional, but if the Rockies were buyers and they were still going to move DJ, I think if you could pull off a deal like that, it would be bizarre, but it could have the potential to be something huge because you have a host of guys who can play that spot. Ryan McMahon, we saw, can play that spot. Ryan McMahon played that spot pretty damn well when DJ was on the disabled list. It's an opportunity to get him regular at bats, which the Rockies seem to be very committed to not doing at the major league level for some reason. But I think DJ is the most expendable guy on the roster, and I know people hate hearing that because, you know, DJ's a good major leaguer. He's a very good major leaguer. He's the best second baseman in Rockies history. But that's like saying he's the tallest guy, you know, in a civilization from 4,000 years ago. Like, right. They were all 4'3".
Yeah. And he was 5 foot.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a giant.
And it just so happens DJ is also very tall. But the Rockies, it's not like the Rockies have had an illustrious list of second basemen. But they have so much depth there that I think, you know, right now, if you're looking at anybody who is expendable, DJ is the one who's expendable. If you're looking at somebody who's going to bring you the highest return, unfortunately, it's Adam Ottavino, which yep. sucks. Related one to that from @Scatburger, Adam Scatula, quote, "It hurts to even ask this. If we become sellers this season, as much as I love Nolan, do you put him on the market for some super haul of prospects? If there's one thing we learned from the Tulo years, one player can't carry a whole team, and we seem far away from contending." I'll let you take it first, and then I'll take it.
Oh boy, this is the hot take from the high IQ members of the Denver, you know, sports radio media going around Rockies Twitter these days, especially this morning.
They should trade Nolan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Okay. 104.3 The Fan. The adults are talking here. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Don't you have like Broncos OTAs to go report on?
Yeah. Exactly.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares about your opinion.
Shouldn't you have a 3-hour show about the stadium being renamed Broncos Stadium at Mile High?
Yeah, and what it means to, you know, generations in Denver going forward. listen, there's no way that this team would even entertain the thought of trading Nolan Arenado right now. He's got at least one more year, and your window is for at least one more year. At least one more year. You have extended that a little bit by signing Charlie. And basically, the window is as open as Nolan Arenado's contract status, basically. So right now, their window is through 2019. Now, you don't necessarily want a Matt Holliday situation, though it did work out for the Rockies in the long run, getting Carlos Gonzalez in that trade. But the Tulo trade, you see what you get for a guy like Tulo, who was one of the greatest players in the history of this franchise. You didn't get much.
You haven't gotten much.
You didn't get much for it. Miguel Castro is shipped away. Jesus Sinoco has not performed the way they thought he would. Jose Reyes was one of the most garbage people that plays in the game today. And then Jeff Hoffman, the jury is still very, very much out on Jeff Hoffman. These deals aren't perfect, and there's no way you can know a perfect deal from the outset. Even if you think you've got can't miss prospects, there is no such thing.
Yeah.
So, no, there's no way this team would entertain it unless we get to the trade deadline next year and the team, or even just a couple months in the season, and the team is just floundering completely. It's very similar to what we're going to see with Manny Machado right now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the Orioles are one of the worst teams in baseball, if not the worst, and they are still holding on to Machado until they find the right deal. And that's, I think, where the Rockies have to do. I don't think you couldn't do it for any reason, a PR reason, a playoff reason, a talent reason, any kind of reason, a clubhouse reason. Trading Nolan Arenado would be a death knell, I think, right now for this team.
Yeah, that would be a PR nightmare, by the way. I think the only circumstance in which I see the Rockies even entertaining the idea of trading Nolan is if they had, from here on until the trade deadline, if they lost 20-plus games. I mean, if they collapsed, if they had a monumental collapse, coupled with Nolan telling the front office in some form or fashion, I will not sign an extension here, then maybe you consider looking at that, because I think a player who has another year of team control obviously is a lot more attractive as a trade piece. But I just don't see it. There would be a super haul of prospects to come back this way, but I don't see it. And I also don't see Nolan as everybody who's like, oh, well, Nolan, they've got no chance of re-signing Nolan Arenado. I don't think that's the case.
I think
Nolan
strikes
me as a guy who is extraordinarily loyal and as a guy who really knows that if he continues on this track, he will be the greatest player to have ever played for this franchise. Not Todd Helton, not Larry Walker, nobody.
He's already on the short list.
He's already in the top 10 easily.
Top five, I think, in my opinion. I don't know.
If he continues this way, that's probably true when you think about the illustrious list of career Rockies. He is a guy who has the potential to be the Rockies' first Hall of Famer. Because I don't think anybody's getting in. I think Larry Walker, maybe with a Tim Raines-like push, could make it in, but that's not until a ways down the road. Todd Helton's never getting in.
And Jonah Carey's so far off the grid, I'm not sure he's going to stump for him, like he waited for Tim Raines. Yeah. God bless him. He just said screw it and
smart man.
You know, went away.
Very smart man.
I'm good for him.
About doing the same. But I think Nolan has a higher level of loyalty and perspective on his current stance in the organization and in organization history than people give him credit for. You know, if Bryce Harper hits the market and Manny Machado hits the market and they get $400 to $500 million, then you probably start taking a much longer look at free agency. But at the same time, I still think the money that the Rockies will come up with what Nolan has already given to the franchise and been through with the franchise, I think will be enough. And the Rockies have shown throughout franchise history, they'll pony up for the right guys. They ponied up for Todd Helton. They ponied up for Joe Tulowitzki. They ponied up for Carlos Gonzalez.
Cargo,
You know, they've shown, and I think
they ponied up for Mike Hampton, Denny Nagel,
the guys who you really like to build a franchise around, they'll throw the money at, like Denny Nagel. but I think, you know, the Tulo thing, we did learn that from the Tulo years, but during that time, you got to keep in mind as well, Tulo was taking up a lot of money. So was Cargo, and so was Jorge De La Rosa. So it wasn't just that one player couldn't carry a whole team. It was that they didn't have any money to build around those guys anyway.
It was funny. So, look at it now. It was a 10-year, $150 million deal for Tulo, like $15 million a year. I know it was somewhat backloaded, but think about that now. Like, that's not that much of an albatross contract.
That is a bargain of a deal these days, which is ridiculous.
Not for the production Tulo was giving now, obviously, considering he's always hurt. But by the way, Fangraphs wins above replacement in Rockies history: Helton, Walker, Tulo, Cargo, Nolan. Number five already, with only 793 games under his belt. Everybody else on that list had at least over 1,000.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
And again, kind of goes to show you I was at the very first Rockies game in franchise history, home game in franchise history. I've been at every single Rockies home playoff game. I am a person who has, good or bad, been stuck with this team since the first day of their existence. When I was down there on Saturday, and it was the 25th anniversary, like, when those are the guys that you're celebrating for your franchise history, it has not been.
Houston Street was there. Like,
Houston Street pitched 3 years in Colorado and like three fine seasons, with the exception of the 2009 division series.
Yeah, we are the leaders of the screw Houston Street bandwagon. Everybody else, whenever we've said on Twitter, like, oh man, we our most hated player in Rockies history is Houston Street, everyone's like, whoa, hey, I loved Houston Street.
Yeah.
I still remember the 2009 NLDS, and I go, nope, sorry.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
I can't either. But like, you look at that team. You look at the team members of who is on the Rockies' all-time 25 roster. Dexter Fowler is on that roster.
And we love Dex.
Dex is fine. Yeah. Matt Belisle is on that roster. You know, as much as I liked him, Aaron Cook is on that roster. Aaron Cook is like a franchise luminary. Still leads in a lot of categories, but like, Aaron Cook is one of your five greatest pitchers of all time.
Yes, probably. Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
he totally
when you
is.
Look at, if you looked at the Marlins if you looked at the Marlins all-time 25, the Marlins have Jose Fernandez in that group. The Marlins have Giancarlo Stanton in their group. Like, the Marlins have produced, like, bona fide superstars at almost every single position. The Marlins developed Miguel Cabrera. The Marlins had some of these guys. You're like, oh, man, they produced some dudes.
Dontrelle Willis, Rockies, you know, some, like, some guys who were, like, you know, luminaries of the game and ambassadors of the game for so long, you know.
A guy who burned bright, and he burned out quickly, but burned very bright when he was a guy in Major League Baseball.
And I can work with him. Like,
I loved that guy.
I love Dontrelle. Well, working with him is one of the delights that I have at FS1. He is one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet.
But, you know, like, their all-time 25 catchers are Chris Iannetta and Yorvit Torrealba.
Yeah.
What? What if the Detroit Lions tried to name an all-time 100 team? Like, it's just,
yeah, Scott Mitchell, come on down.
Rodney Pete.
It's just going to be like...
It's like Barry Sanders is the
Barry
Todd
Sanders
Helton.
And then 40 guys from the 1950s. Like... Like
it's just like
half of the all-time Detroit Lions roster will be dead.
Like, yeah. I love this. I love the team. I love the franchise. I'll be a Rockies fan until I die. If they ever win a World Series from now until my death, which is exceedingly unlikely, I will break down sobbing, and it'll be the happiest thing that ever happened to me. But, like, let's call a spade with this all-time team.
I mean... Like, to that point, at Arenado Goat, as what do the Rockies and or their fans do to upset the baseball gods? Are we cursed? Okay, so what is your basis of a curse? How long does that to be cursed? Like, are the Mariners cursed? They've been around since the 60s, have never won a World Series. Like,
the longest drought of any of
playoffs.
Those four professional major teams, right. Playoff drought. They've not been in the playoffs since 2000.
Like, were the Astros cursed until they won last year? Like, I don't think everyone was calling it a curse.
Yeah, I don't know what a curse is so much as just bad management.
Has to be at least like 50 years, 60 years, like.
I think for a long time it was bad ownership. For a long time it was bad management. I think ownership has taken a tremendous leap forward in the way they've conducted themselves. I think management has taken a tremendous leap forward in who is calling the shots now. I don't think it's cursed. I think because for it to be a baseball curse.
Like the Red Sox were cursed. The Cubs were cursed. Like,
and they have good stories with them. They have the Bambino. They have whatever the hell the goat was. Nobody cares. There's got to be a good story. The Mets had the cat that walked across the on deck circle. What do the Rockies have? The Farmore scandal? Mickey Moniz? Is this the curse of Mickey Moniz?
Mickey Moniz, yeah.
Like,
the curse of the 2006 USA Today article.
They made the World Series the next year just as a swipe. Like, this is as close as you're going to get. For those who are uninitiated on both of those, Mickey Moniz was the original, I think it was the principal owner of the Rockies, who was indicted on federal fraud charges in the early 90s and very nearly sank the entire prospect of Major League Baseball in Colorado until an ownership group bought him out, which gave us the Monfords. So there you go. The 2006 USA Today story, which I'm sure you could still find somewhere.
Oh, yeah. It's still archived.
Was all about how the Rockies basically drafted and developed guys who were Christians. And that was their thing, was they wanted guys with strong Christian values in the
clubhouse. You won't see Playboys or Maxims in the locker room. You'll see Bibles.
That's as close as I've ever come to giving up on this franchise. Because if there was a low point, that was the low point.
Just wait till they sign Luke Heimlich or something. Yeah.
That's a Royals deal, it seems like, these days.
Oh, boy. Royals, baby, what you doing?
Buster Olney yesterday was like, Dayton Moore has so much credibility that he could make this move happen.
Bullshit.
Like, credibility for signing an admitted felon for child molestation charges? Like, I think people should be given second chances. I think we're way too focused on retribution and not rehabilitation and people being given an opportunity to pursue pathways forward in their lives. But if I am a major league general manager,
I am running as far away as I possibly can from that entire situation.
I'm not even entertaining the idea of discussing it in my front office.
There's a South Park episode from way back called Cripple Fight, where Jimmy and Timmy, I don't know if you've seen the episode, Jimmy and Timmy are in a big battle, and eventually they have their two handicapped characters, and they have a big fight, and it's a big build up to the big fight. And the boys in the episode, the entire time, when they find out there's this big brawl going on between Timmy and Jimmy, they just kind of walk through the scene from left to right, not even stopping, going, nah, we're staying out of this one, guys, sorry. And that's what every GM should do for this whole situation. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're not going to deal with this one today, guys. Sorry.
Yep. Yep.
And like, and the false equivalency of Dayton Moore saying, well, we've taken chances on players in the past, like Sherrod Dyson, who had an amphetamine suspension in the minor leagues.
Can you imagine being Gerard Dyson?
I would be
lumped
furious.
Into that. Me too. Like the only thing that's even somewhat in this same realm is Matt Bush.
Yes.
That's the only Matt Bush killed someone in a DUI. No, didn't kill the guy. The guy lived, but ran over a motorcyclist in a DUI, and it was the latest in a string of incidents with Matt Bush, but went to prison, served his time, and the Texas Rangers signed him after he had been released from a sentence.
That is by far the closest you would ever come. Like
Luke Heimlich, left-handed pitcher for Oregon State, if you're unfamiliar with his story, admitted to molesting his, I believe, six-year-old niece when he was in high school, and was
pled
placed
guilty.
On probation.
Like, pled guilty. Like, yeah, it's not like allegations. He pled guilty.
And said that he pled guilty because he wanted to prevent his niece from having to testify in a trial. And I know that there's a lot more that goes into this stuff with mandatory minimum sentencing and with all this type of stuff. There's a lot more that goes into it than just, well, he pled guilty. He had to have done it in the exact way that it's all said. And I'm not saying that that absolves Luke Heimlich or that he didn't do it. Luke Heimlich has since come out and said, I didn't do it. There was no incident to even speak of, but I pled guilty because it was going to keep a lot of pressure on my family. Well, I don't know, man. Yeah. If I didn't do something that heinous, I don't think that I would worry quite as much about somebody going on the witness stand as I would about the rest of my life being thrown off track by admitting to that.
And the whole thing, it was going to be expunged from his record. He was a minor. It was going to be expunged from his record after 5 years or whatever. And it was only by a clerical error by the state of Oregon where they didn't know that he had to register as a sex offender when he started attending Oregon State. That this whole thing came to light.
He did not inform, I think, the police in his home state of Washington. He didn't inform them that he had moved, so they issued a warrant for his arrest or something like that, and some Oregonian reporters came across it, and it turned into a big thing at the end of last season with Oregon State. He took a leave from the team while they were in the NCAA tournament. Now he's back. Oregon State's in the finals. But was not drafted, wasn't drafted last year. He's a senior this year, wasn't drafted this year either. And it seems like most everybody had kind of figured this is not anything even remotely worth discussing. And then here come the Royals, apparently. Like, so I don't know.
And, what are you thinking if you're the Royals? Like, you are the team that came out last year and saying they are the anti-porn team. They try to make their players stop like looking at porn.
That.
And then you're going to be the team that also signs the literally convicted child molester. No, I'm running away from that story. If I'm a GM, as quickly as humanly possible, there is nothing good in it for you.
No,
nothing. Even if he pitches for you and you win a World Series, you'll always be the team that signed a convicted child molester and he won you a game in the World Series.
And
nope.
I do think there is a lot of validity to the young girl's mother in an interview. Said as long as he is in the spotlight, she is in the spotlight because of him. So
absolutely.
If he goes on to have a Hall of Fame career, this girl is going to have to deal with that for the next 20 years of her life and on beyond it, because Luke Heimlich will never fade into obscurity. And that is, man, that's a tough situation.
Yep.
I would never want to do. And that's the thing. Like, if you're a major league organization, yes, I get that you want to win at all costs, etc.
That's a hell of a cost.
That's like way too much to even deal with. Like, is that worth it? Is Luke Heimlich's upside even as a pitcher? Is that worth it? Like, he's a good left-handed college pitcher, but
like,
it
still plays every 5 days. You know, like, is that really going to win you a World Series? Is that going to be worth it?
Man,
like, how many World Series does he have to win for that to be quote unquote worth it? Like, honestly, the answer is nothing, because you should never be in that situation to begin with.
So I don't know how we got on that, and I'm certainly not equating this to that. The low point, I think that's where it transitioned. Low points for fans. Low point for me was that 2016, because the Rockies had been garbage for so long. They had one playoff appearance in franchise history, and then it came out. We're signing players based on their Christian values. And that was like when I had moved, I like grew up, went to Catholic school my whole life, and then I went to college and I was like, huh, all of this is nonsense. And so I had moved pretty firmly into what I now feel about organized religion and things. And that was just like so humiliating. And it was like the article was written and the Rockies had no credibility on the baseball field
at that time.
It was almost like that article was written in a mocking way. And it wasn't. The article was written very earnestly, but the existence of the article mocked the Rockies because of how pathetic they looked. They were so bad on the field. Management was so terrible. And then a story like that comes out, and it's like, oh, maybe that's why you're not winning baseball games, because you're not committed to signing good baseball players.
Signing guys because of their value system. And the story came out a few years later about that whole year. That was obviously the same year that the Rockies drafted Greg Reynolds over Evan Longoria.
Yeah.
So the story came out that during their interviews with the top picks, the Rockies had the number 2 overall pick, obviously, interview with the top selections in that draft. They asked Evan Longoria if he would take Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. And Evan Longoria was like, huh? Nah.
Right.
And Greg Reynolds said yes. And they drafted Greg Reynolds.
Oh, man. So, they're not dealing with that anymore. I guess if I had not even really ever, I think, consciously thought about this, because I don't think I ever wanted to, but I guess if I had to pick a low point of Rockies fandom, that would have been it.
That's
2008 sucked, but 2006 was terrible.
We got some questions that are fun. Let's go to the fun
part. Let's go to fun questions. This
up. All right. From Renee Deckard at 307, Renee, which Rockies should be in the ESPN body issue?
Ooh.
Yasiel Puig was on the cover of the new ESPN body issue with carrying a tray of peanuts right by his genitals. And, we had the same photo shoot. Tyler and I did.
We did.
We're waiting for the pictures to develop from Walmart. They didn't get back to us yet.
Yeah. We took them to the hour photo thing like a week ago.
Yeah.
And they said they would confiscate anything that they thought was criminal. So I'm assuming that's what happened. In the body issue.
Ian Desmond, probably.
Probably Ian Desmond. Ian Desmond's just jacked. And he's got a lot of body art.
He's jacked and he's handsome, you know?
Yeah, he's a handsome dude. Yeah,
and he's also playing better baseball now.
I think they should do it of, like, frumpy guys who would be very awkward looking, like Brian Shaw with his terrible facial hair and his, like, kind of dad bod.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty funny. I think that'd be pretty good.
Who are, like, the best Rockies in history in the body issue? Like Brian Bohannon?
Charlie Hayes.
Yeah, Charlie Hayes.
Yeah. By the way, the other day, a friend of mine, Adam, was in town from Taiwan, a guy who I did broadcast with a few years ago, and Adam and I have seen each other a bunch ever since. He's now working for, like, Yahoo Sports' Taiwanese arm, and he's over here covering Taiwanese major leaguers. So he was with the Marlins with Wei-Yin Chen. He was in town. We went to Bill's Sports Collectibles the other day, because a couple years ago he came and visited, and we went to Bill's, and he's been obsessed with it ever since. And when we were there, we were looking through the 93 Rockies media guide. And how is it that all of those guys, granted, I was 7 years old when the Rockies started playing baseball, and so they were all considerably older than me, but all of those guys were like in their mid-20s and all looked like they were 55 years old. Like when you go back and look at like Bruce Ruffin and Steve Reed and Charlie Hayes and all these guys, they all looked so old. They all like terrible mustaches and bad mullets and shit. They all looked like mid-50s dudes, and they were all like 27 at the time. Baffles me.
Like, I'm surprised people don't look older right now just based on what's going on in the world every single day.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I have...
We're aging like Obama, I feel like.
I have many gray hairs.
Yeah.
It's, that would be an all-time body issue Rockies team would be... That would be something. We might have to think longer and harder about that.
Whoa, hey, family website.
Hi-yo. Let's find some more entertaining ones.
That one from a MLB insider Dinger. Have not heard from him in a while. At ATF 13 ATF. Is an Uncrustable a sandwich or a ravioli?
I think it's a ravioli.
I think it's a ravioli too, because it's crimped and it's closed.
Exactly.
Right?
It's crimped at the end and it's closed off. So that to me makes it almost is more like a meat pie.
Yeah, it's like an empanada.
It's something like that, but it's way closer to being ravioli than it is to being a sandwich. By the way, I just clicked on smuckersuncrustables.com in case you were hoping that Uncrustables had a website. They do indeed have a website.
Hooray.
It's very exciting. But yeah, I think it's like, it is almost like empanada-ish. But if we're going to nail it down to one of those two, it's definitely way, I don't care that it comes filled with PB&J. It's definitely way more of a ravioli. From Kyle at Bishop KM, what's your favorite novelty Twitter account?
There's so many good ones here. It's the only thing that keeps me coming back to Twitter sometimes, or the novelty Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
In terms of the Rockies, Rockies Drill, the team of dudes that do that, they do a fantastic job. Just Drill in general is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
To Share Zone makes me laugh almost every single time I read it.
That's like Pixelated Boat. That's another one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's another account that just everything on it is funny. I in a non-funny sense, at HealerBot is just a picture that tweets out pictures of Australia, or an account that tweets out pictures of Australian cattle dogs, and that
would make more
saves
sense.
My day on a regular basis. Yeah. As far as non-novelty accounts, Ken Jennings, the guy who won like 50
He's
straight episodes
fantastic.
Of Jeopardy, is hysterical on Twitter. Yeah. He's so funny.
He is very funny.
And not like somebody that you would expect necessarily to be funny, but he is really damn good.
Yes.
From our buddy Adam Busek at KingBus5, quote, besides listening to your podcast, what are some ways to make me not feel so bored/lonely when driving the range picker at my golf course tomorrow? Cam at Cameron Goldner, formerly the juniorest member of Rocky's Twitter. Cam, now old man in college.
Cam's not even close to being the youngest
Cam's
member of Rocky's Twitter anymore.
By all of these other young Rocky's Twitter members. Cam suggested kidnap a golfer to ride around with you, which I think is a pretty solid suggestion.
Yeah, and I feel bad for Cam this year because he, like, Rockies versus Connor, the meme king, he made a meme this year, earlier this year, about if something happens here, if blank happens here, I will buy Cam a pizza. If Ian Desmond homers, if John Gray pitches a shutout, whatever, I will buy Cam a pizza. Now, every single time someone has said that, that thing has not happened. So now it's turning into a kiss of death. Like last night, saying, if Adam Ottavino gets through this unscathed, I will buy Cam a pizza. He did not, obviously, because of John Tumpane, the home plate umpire. So it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Someone's got to buy Cam a pizza eventually. Like, that should be a thing, right? Nobody's got to buy Cam a pizza. Like, at some point,
probably.
Like Venmo him $10. He is a poor college student, you know?
Yeah. Maybe we go like six. Do they have Little Caesars in Albuquerque?
Little Caesar.
Hot and ready.
Hot and ready.
Hot and ready.
Well, wait. Is it good? Well, it's hot and it's ready. Got it.
The greatest ad campaign Ryan Bloom. Out there. At Bloomer Deluxe, one of our good pals, Ryan, and this is one that has a visual component, so you might have to go find Ryan's tweet, but Ryan asks, which tattoo should I get? And they are Chinese characters. One is an ideograph of shaking one's head, and the other is of the words bitter, hardship, or suffering. That's what the ideograph means. Which tattoo, as a Rockies fan? I think being part of Rocky's Twitter, you go with shaking one's head and you get SMH under it.
And you put like SMH in characters, in like Chinese
SMDH
characters.
Chinese characters.
I think that is accurate.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
All right, from Jordan Ambron at Jordan Ambron. If Dinger played in an adult softball league, what position would he play and where would he bat in the order?
A good question. I think, you know, he's been rehearsing to catch for the last like 20 some years by being so annoying sitting behind home plate in the ninth inning. As Steve Berthume calls him, Dinger the Fairweather mascot, because he's only behind the plate in the top of the ninth when the Rockies are leading.
He has not been there in a while.
He's been there in quite some time, so I think he's been training to catch, but he's also, I feel like he's like a five hole hitter. He's like a dude who, he's not, there's no speed there, he's wide bodied. You're just counting on him for power.
I mean, in beer league softball, like it's like Little League, you'd put him in right field because he's the worst player. He's just the fat kid, you know?
That's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
All right. From Ryan Ladika at Ryan Ladika. This is for you, pretty much, because it concerns things that you know a lot about. I thought of this question after you recorded last time. If I'm going to get into the Australian Baseball League, which is the best team to root for that won't make me want to claw my eyes out just like that game last night did?
Well, if you're looking for a team that won't make you claw your eyes out, it's probably in recent years the Brisbane Bandits, who have won three straight league titles. The Perth Heat have always been very good.
Our friend Matt Canelli.
You could go for Perth. Canberra has usually been pretty good. Adelaide and Sydney are kind of the teams that have never gotten over the hump, really, especially Sydney. Sydney has never even made a championship series.
But they got the best hat.
Have the best hat, and that team is near and dear to my heart because I worked for them during our inaugural season. And so my vote would be the Blue Sox, but they will make you tear your eyes out, so probably not an answer to this question. So if you want to go with a team that's going to be successful, probably the Brisbane Bandits. However, I will say you have the opportunity to get in on the ground floor with one of two new teams in the Australian League starting in 2018-2019. Geelong is a city in the state of Victoria, which will host an entire team of Korea Baseball Organization players.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which cool. is really cool. They'll yeah. be based in Geelong, which is near Melbourne. Right now the team is just called Geelong Korea. But Geelong will be hosting that team. They are finally adding a New Zealand team, which I know the name of, and I'm thinking will probably be stabbed in the temple if I say it. But they will be hosting a team that is going to be in Auckland in the 2018-2019 season. So you could jump on board one of those two teams, which would be kind of cool. But yeah, if you're looking for a team to not pull your eyeballs out, probably Brisbane.
Got it.
Definitely not Sydney.
All right, from Matt Hansen, this is a good one. In what order will the four major Denver teams make their next postseason appearance? Same question, but next championship.
Man.
Who is closest?
That is a great question. This is what's so tough about that question is I'm going to say the next playoff appearance in Denver is going to be the 2018 Colorado Rockies, man. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
I'm holding to it.
Okay.
The Nuggets and Avalanche are both going to the playoffs next year.
I got to imagine so.
Especially when the Nuggets land LeBron James as Earl.
When they get LeBron, they're going to be the number one seed in the Western Conference.
Apparently, Earl Boykins has the inside knowledge on everything.
But to be fair, the Nuggets are—I think they're going to be very good next year.
I think they will be.
They're
going
to sign Jokic to a max deal.
Yeah, they're going to be loaded.
I mean, Michael Porter Jr. I'm not sure if he's going to play or how much he'll play, but that was a hell of a get at number 14.
If he's healthy,
Jamal Murray is a star.
Yeah.
Like Gary Harris.
And all those guys are young, but have another year under their belts now. Right. I mean, that team is. They're set up for a while. The Avalanche are largely the same. The Avalanche have a lot of young pieces that are very, very talented and very good. The issue is the Nuggets have never played in an NBA final.
Nope.
The Avalanche have not played in a Stanley Cup final since 2001 because the playoffs are so brutal to get through in those two sports, especially in hockey because you're playing seven games. Physically, it just beats the hell out of you over the course of the 82-day regular season.
Like two months worth of playoffs.
So that's tough. That is really tough. The thing that sucks is I think the closest team to making a finals appearance, to making a championship appearance, is probably the Broncos because it's so much easier to turn a franchise around in the NFL.
True.
Now, do I think that means they're close? No.
They still have an outstanding defense probably this year.
I just think it's so much more difficult than every other sport.
Yeah, it depends. What you think of Case Keenum? I think they're destined for 8-8 again, you know.
Yeah. They'll be better. That doesn't mean they're going to be good. Nah. They'll be better. But yeah, how would you? So I would say next playoff appearances for the Rockies, Nuggets and Avalanche are both going to make the playoffs next year. I think the Broncos are a ways away from the playoffs, but you know, conceivably 2019, 2020. Yeah. If you can make the playoffs at 9-7 in the NFL these days, the Broncos could make that in 2019. I think that's theoretically possible. But you know, 2-3 years down the road, they could be a Super Bowl team because that's how the NFL works. You can turn things around very quickly in the NFL by comparison.
I'll say Avs, Nuggets, Rockies, Broncos, playoffs in that order.
Okay.
I think Rockies next year. I think the NL is too good this year, personally. Okay. They got to go on a pretty good run.
That's fair.
And then championship? Yeah, it's... only
it just
two,
says more about like, the sport of football than it does about
or, yeah like listen there are like two teams that can win the title every year in the NBA and really just one it's like there's competitive balance because you can get to the playoffs in the NBA because every team makes playoffs in the NBA except for the Nuggets apparently this year, but you can't win anything so championship. Nuggets are probably at the bottom of that list because they just nobody wins titles. Championship, I'll go Avs, Broncos, Rockies, Nuggets.
Okay. Wow.
I mean, the Avs, I think they've shown enough. And if they continue on this run, that they've got enough young talent, they can...
They have a generational player in
Nathan McKinnon. If they can get the goaltending they've so desperately needed.
Yeah.
They got Grubauer just now from the Capitals. We'll see. We've seen that the Avs are a team that can do that. I know it was when they had Pierre Lacroix and there was no salary cap, or there was salary cap, and they just said, screw the luxury tax and just paid for everybody.
He's going to acquire everybody anyway.
Yeah, everybody. And it was great. But they've proven they can do it.
Yeah.
The Nuggets have never even made an NBA Finals.
Thanks, Anthony Carter. Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. This one came in a couple of weeks ago, but it was such a good question that I wanted to get to it. And it's from at Roadrunner underscore Rocks, RDRNNR. And he said, quote, "I'm not suggesting that the Rockies bullpen is trying to kill me, but if they were, what would they be doing differently?" Just such a perfectly worded question.
If they were actually trying to kill us, what would they be doing differently? That's a great
question. I don't think anything. Like, at this stage.
No, it's like, hey, the offense is scoring six runs a game in the month of June. And the team is 8-15.
Hold my beer.
Like,
don't
yeah.
worry, I got this.
Ugh.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's anything you really change up.
Yeah, I mean, like Wade Davis has blown saves in the ninth. They've blown leads in the seventh, blown leads in the eighth.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Blown leads in the fifth and sixth. You know?
Been great. This team. All right, let's end on a good note. We got a tweet in last week from Alex Waterfield, and Alex then followed up with this tweet. And Alex, we have had on Ask PDP questions times before. He is at Waffle Blaster, which is one of the best Twitter yeah. handles on Rocky's Twitter.
It's true.
Alex tweeted in and asked us if we could give a retweet to a GoFundMe page for his wife's kidney transplant. Jennifer Waterfield, and her GoFundMe page is gofundme.com/my-transplant-story. And as of right now, Jennifer's page has raised $2,620 of $3,500, which is her goal. Go on, do what you can. Please donate. But Alex yeah. tweeted at us and said, yeah. "Can you please give your listeners Alex and Jennifer Waterfield's kindest thank yous for donating to our GoFundMe? Rockies fans have been unbelievably kind to us, and we can't thank you enough for the retweet." You don't have to thank us. Like we didn't do anything.
Yeah.
But thank you to all of you who listened, who saw the link, who were able to do what you could. Again, it's gofundme.com/my-transplant-story. Jennifer's story is on there. Alex has been one of our listeners for a while, and we've engaged with him and asked PDP stuff for a long time. But Jennifer is receiving a kidney transplant by the end of 2018. She's been on the transplant list for 5 years, but she is a great candidate for a donor kidney. And she was diagnosed with, and I'm not going to be able to say this correctly, but IgA nephropathy. As she describes it, quote, "Basically, there's an antibody lodged in my kidneys, which makes it so my kidneys can't filter things anymore." And she, when she was 20 years old, ended up in a hospital because her kidneys were shutting down. But now she hasn't been on dialysis. She's been okay with medication, all that type of stuff. As of right now, though, looks as though she's going to be getting the transplant by the end of the year. Unfortunately, we don't live in a society where this is just covered and you don't have to think about it and you have to resort to crowdfunding in order to live, which is extraordinarily unfortunate, and hopefully
totally normal country
will be different in some respect. But if you can, please help out a member of the Rockies family. GoFundMe.com/my-transplant-story and help out the Waterfields. It's pretty cool to get a chance to see people outside of, you know, the humanity of people is neat when we get to engage with people as like, oh, these are human beings that have real lives and that we're happy to be able to try to help in some form or fashion. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the world needs more good. So please exactly. do good.
So
be
do
more
what
kind.
You can. Yeah. Do good. Be more kind and help out in any way that you can. And just as a totally different note, Waterfield just makes me think of Waterford, which is the terrible people's names in The Handmaid's Tale. So don't get them confused. Alex and Jennifer, very good. Mr. and Mrs. Waterford, very bad.
Yes.
The Handmaid's Tale, just in case you're all wondering.
Got it.
That's how it goes. So I guess that'll do it. We'll wrap up this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. You can buy our shirts. We are very possibly rolling out some new shirts.
We got some ideas, guys.
Although
yeah.
I think maybe we might wait until they're playing better and we can capitalize on people being happy. But we are going to hopefully roll out some new shirts sometime soon. And yeah, so keep an eye on Big Cartel, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com, and we're excited for it. Until then, you can get in touch with the show. purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com is the email address that we never check, and we're on Twitter at purpledinocast. Anthony is at Master Tones. I am at Tyler Mon. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully we brightened your week a little bit this week with some Ask PDPs.
Here's open.
That'll do it. We'll talk to you next week. I'm going camping for a few days, so nobody talk to me. I don't want to hear anything about the world until ever.
Lucky you.
So that's it. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.